Welcome to the full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:29 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is September 13th. I thought I would kick off with Bitcoin. It's been quite volatile today. It was up 400 at one point, down 800 the next, and now settling down not all that far away from where it opened. So we had the big downward dynamic a week ago, and since then prices really haven't gone anywhere. They're sort of holding here around the $45,000 level. And it's the region of the simple moving average, but still quite a ways from the exponential moving average. And of course, in normal times, those two measures, they don't diverge from one another all that much, but we've had such incredible volatility, both up and down in Bitcoin. Well, then you are getting this environment where there's a big divergence. There was speculation earlier on today that Litecoin was being adopted by Walmart, and that saw its price jump in a really profound manner in a very short period of time. But then we can see that the news came through that that was nonsense, and as a result, prices came straight back down again. So that also weighed on the Bitcoin price. Now, we can look at that, just getting the ticker. We can look at that big move that we saw in Litecoin. So big pop on the upside, and then it came straight back down again. But I think it has to be put in context of the big move that we had up to the peak in May, the subsequent decline, and since then, really not much of anything. So what is, I think, rather interesting is that there's a lot of volatility, there's a lot of trading around, and there's certainly a lot of activity on behalf of traders, and there's a lot of shenanigans going on that wouldn't be normal in any kind of regulated market. But of course, cryptocurrencies are not regulated, so it's extremely difficult to make one's case in any kind of court of law, because there aren't any regulations. And that means that all of the shenanigans that were present in markets in the past that have gradually been excised through rules and regulations are perfectly permissible within the cryptocurrency world. In other words, it is the Wild West and anything goes. But one of the biggest challenges for the sector right now is that there is increasing speculation in the non-fungible tokens market. So this is an additional iteration of the cryptocurrency environment. It's no longer talking about currencies, no longer talking about digital solutions to problems that may or may not exist in the global economy, and instead simply creating fractional ownership of physical assets. And this is rather different than the stock market, because in the stock market you also have fractional ownership. You have the stock and you own a piece of the company and you can trade that, but of course the trading of it is very much bound by regulation and by then rules and regulations and taxes and forward-looking statements. Then we can think about other assets. So there are property assets, there are collectibles that haven't been easy to trade in the past, and now it's much easier to trade them. So we're creating, we're in an environment where there is fractional ownership being created of works of art, or whole collections of works of art, or whole collections owned by museums. And they're using that as a way to raise money to embellish their collections or to build new buildings. And they're selling off the non-fungible tokens, which are in turn being fractionalized and then traded. So while each one of those individual fractions might represent a piece of the asset itself, then none of those individual fractions confer ownership. So we're getting an environment where pieces of physical items are being sold off and their value is increasing in terms of exponents, and that doesn't confer any real right to physical ownership. So the assets stay inside the museum, but yet their value can fluctuate significantly, and the value of these non-fungible tokens is exploding. So that is sucking some of the speculative frenzy out of the traditional tokens, which had the modest ambitions of disrupting the entire financial system, and it's moving on to the much more speculative market of bidding up the price of assets that range in value from being completely worthless to being priceless. So we're in an extremely interesting environment, but of course it's also representative of the speculative frenzy that is evolving. And this is also indicative of bubbly activity. Now we can also think about shares that continue to trend higher in a consistent manner. Google is certainly one of those. The trend has been really incredibly impressive, and it's clearly got a sequence of ranges, one above another, but the pace of the advance is picking up, and there's no getting around the fact that it is accelerating, but it's doing so in really quite a consistent manner. So the price is currently pausing in the region of the most recent of these ranges, and as long as it's holding that $2,800 level, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But of course, it's also accelerating, so then we have to pay some, I think, clear attention to the chart, because if it starts to lose consistency, well, then that will be indicative of potentially a peak of more than short-term significance. So these incredibly impressive trends are certainly great to ride, but also need to be monitored quite acutely or attentively. Now, when we think about UK natural gas prices, well, the price has been surging higher, and it is up nearly four times this year, up from 40 to 160. And historically, prices really haven't come back down, haven't been able to sustain a move above 80. So we're now double the peak value over the course of the last decade. And this is representative of the kind of environment we're living in today, where we have a great deal more volatility in energy pricing and availability. We've gone through decades where the expectation of having access to reliable sources of electricity and gas was really just taken for granted. Whereas today, with the introduction of renewables, where regardless of how one wants to argue about how efficacious the or how necessary the investment in renewables is, there's just no getting around the problem that when the wind stops blowing, you don't get electricity. And then when there's a shortage of gas at the same time, prices can go up a lot. So prices like this accelerating higher, they don't last indefinitely. And it just, I think, further emphasizes that the Nord Stream 2 pipeline is probably going to be permissioned in a very timely manner. And Russia wants to get it moving on the 1st of October, and it's quite likely that Germany is probably going to permission it, if not before the election, probably really quite soon after their election. And that should help to bring down prices. So that would probably help to ameliorate the situation in the short term. But the longer term challenge is that in order to alleviate this kind of volatility, what we need is energy storage solutions. And hydropower is the and are pumping from low elevations to high elevations has been the classic way of doing that, and most of the easily attainable hydro storage solutions have been exploited. So it means that building new ones is going to be expensive. If we talk about building industrial batteries, it's expensive, and aluminium prices are now at highs that we haven't seen in years. And of course, the Aluminium is one of those battery metals that is used for those non-movable batteries. So that is at least part of the reason why aluminium prices are rising, because there is an acute demand for storage solutions for energy. And aluminium continues to extend this breakout, and we're now approaching the highs from back in 2006 and 8. So this is a very significant change. Energy is obviously a major component in the production of aluminium, and then you have the coup in Guinea, which is knocking out supply of cheap bauxite. It's not like bauxite isn't produced elsewhere, but Guinea is one of the cheapest producers of it. Oil prices continue to firm from the region of the trend mean, so we're certainly getting this increasing volatility in the commodity markets, where there are incrementally higher or worse problems emerging in the terms of the global supply chain. So natural gas is continuing to accelerate. Oil prices continue to firm. Aluminium has been breaking on the upside. At the other end of the spectrum, we have iron ore prices, which have been coming back down. Now, they were a little steadier in here today, but this has been an acute decline, and it is clearly after demonstrating resistance in the region of the trend mean. So there is a lot of work here to demonstrate a return to demand dominance. But then we can ask ourselves simple questions. How likely is it that prices are going to come back down to the lows that they saw in 2016? And of course, there is then the additional question, how much of a problem is the bankruptcy of Evergrande going to represent? The share continues to decline, and I think that there is the potential that they are simply going to stop trading it. And then the bonds continue to trend lower as well. So I think there is, I saw one headline today to the extent that China Evergrande's bonds will probably get, are they're being priced as if they're going to have a 75% haircut. And the bond price is now down to about 33. So that's not quite a 75% haircut, but it's not all that far off it either. So when we then think about the impact that that could have on China, well, I think it is quite likely that there will be measures introduced to stop contagion. But we're still in an uncertain environment with regard to regulatory change in China, and how are they going to tackle some of these problems that won't easily be fixed with politics. The CSI 300, however, remains rather range-bound if still trading below the trend mean. And I think one reason why I'm reasonably confident that they're going to introduce whatever measures are necessary to avoid contagion is because the Shanghai Property Index continues to push higher. So it's now back above the trend mean. It has cleared the 6,000 level. So we're not seeing the same degree of contagion within the property markets that we would, for example, have seen with the banking sector in 2006. This is not quite the same thing. And these property developers do have assets, so we may simply see a transfer from strong to weak hands, or from the other way around, sorry, from weak to strong hands. When we then think about what's going on in Asia, I think Japan is giving us a very good example of what we can anticipate from other countries as well. We have an election, or I guess it's a choosing of a new leader ahead of an election, and they have different plans for how to reinvigorate the economy, but the important point is none of them really want to raise taxes or curtail spending. So we're still in an environment which is very liquid, and in an environment where no political party wants to engage in fiscal austerity. That's helping to support Japan, and the second section index pushed on to a new all-time high in here today. So it has clearly bounced from the region of the trend mean and now pushing up and out of a range that's been forming now for the better part of 3 years. So, or in fact, it's nearly 4 years. So this is a significant tailwind for additional upside in Japan. And we've had the reversion to the mean, and it's been bouncing for 4 weeks, whereas the Nikkei has been bouncing for three. So we're still getting the lead indicator from the very small companies on the second section. Now, when we think about the S&P 500, it has been pulling back over 5 consecutive days, and it was in additional negative territory for much of today, but at least closing in positive territory. We've had drawdowns in the market in the middle of the month for each of the last five. So this is the most recent of these, and it's now coming back into the region of the succession of higher reaction lows. Now, we haven't had quite the same response in terms of the VIX on this occasion as we have had over the course of the last couple of months, but it is looking increasingly likely that we're going to start to see dip buying coming back in. We have CPI figures tomorrow, and I think investors are pausing ahead of those events. But we also had news in here today about vaccines, where it's looking increasingly likely that the vast majority of people will not need to be given third or even fourth doses of these vaccines. The people that are most at risk are still the same people who've been at risk from the coronavirus since the beginning. They're the infirm, the elderly, and those with significant pre-existing conditions like diabetes or high blood pressure or hypertension. So I still fail to understand why politicians didn't simply tell people to try and live healthier lives and really devote more of their time to try and tell people how to avoid getting sick in the first place, rather than these cross currents of advice that we've had over the course of the last 18 months, which have only frightened people on the one hand, and then many other people are concerned about government overreach and what this is going to mean for future crises, considering the rather inept way that this has been handled on this occasion. One has to wonder whether lessons will have been learned or whether lessons haven't been learned. It's really going to be a difficult scenario overall. Now, when we think, though, that investors are at least willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the economy, well, if we're not going to have additional doses, well, then there's less need to concentrate on some of these companies. So Moderna was down in a dynamic manner today, and this looks like a lower high. But that should be beneficial for the wider economy and the recovery, and most particularly from coming out from under the specter of the Delta variant. So I think it is likely that we're going to see a bounce in the near term for some of these markets. And I think considering the commonality that we've seen right across markets, well then the small pullbacks we've seen, for example, on the FTSE 250 or the Euro stocks or the ASX in Australia, they are all likely to rebound in the event that Wall Street also rebounds from this most recent of these short-term pullbacks. And we can then think about the ASX 200 in particular, where it's had this very consistent trend, and it's right in the region of the upper side of the most recent of those underlying ranges. So it's a natural area where we could anticipate some support starting to come back in now. When we think about the at the broader environment. Well, if we're going to have countries embarking upon additional spending measures and a reluctance to raise interest rates in a hurry, and that really is eventually going to start to concentrate minds on just how much modern monetary theory are we going to have before there'll be a clear inflationary response. So that's part of the reason why people are, I think, holding their breath ahead of the inflation figures tomorrow. But it is still a bull market argument for why gold should continue to outperform. Of course, gold hasn't been outperforming for most of the last year, but that awfully big downward move and rebound we saw at the beginning of August does help to lend credence to the view that the lows are in. So it's increasingly likely that we're coming out the other end of this corrective phase. And once we get a clear move above $1,800 that is sustained, and we continue to then see additional upside, well, then we'll have clear evidence that we're coming out the other end of this. So we're not at the point where we can point to a clear signal and say, well, that's it. There's definitely a new uptrend, but certainly this big move up off the lows in August was about as clear a signal that the low was in as we might wish for. It's just that we haven't had the clear follow-through on the upside to confirm it right now. But one thing that I do find comforting is that there is an awful lot of negative sentiment being expressed. So then we can also think about the holdings of ETFs, because it has been moderating, but not in an especially dynamic manner. And when it pops back above the 100 level and above the trend mean, well, then we'll have clear evidence of a return to demand dominance, and that we can then anticipate a return to performance of gold and gold assets generally. And it's quite likely that we are now back in an inflationary environment, and in a more convincing fashion than we were after 2008, because commodity prices peaked in 2011, and we had a very significant advance after 2008. But 2011 also coincided with the beginning of fiscal austerity in the U.S. with the success of the Tea Party movement, and that fiscal consolidation that killed off the inflationary bias in the system. So we just don't have that now. It looks increasingly likely, therefore, that we're going to have more inflation. We're going to have more episodes of volatility in commodity pricing, and that's before we even get into winter. And then there's the additional pressure that we're seeing on food prices, because food prices are going up everywhere, and there's a clear trend higher in wheat prices. It's extremely volatile, difficult to trade, but it is moving higher. And the price today is 50% higher than it was a year ago. And that's feeding through into the price of all food commodities. And this is the kind of thing that is going to represent wage demand growth. Because when people see food prices and the things they're spending money on every day increasing, it's likely that inflationary pressures will start to rise. And that will force both additional measures in terms of social and fiscal measures to give money to people. There's no tolerance for cutting back in spending, so it's going to force central banks to persist with buying. So that's why I remain extremely leery of these pronouncements by central banks that they're going to engage in tapering. With the plans that are underway by governments to increase spending, particularly in the USA, but in much of the rest of the world as well, well, it's hard to imagine how central banks are going to be able to stop continuing to buy those bonds. We're in the reality of modern monetary theory. That's what's fueling the speculation in the cryptocurrencies and NFT markets, and it's also helping to sustain bull markets on Wall Street. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.